Doctor than Tunes Outreach FM at 7:33 and the way to 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, pick a time. It doesn't matter.
We're on the way to an o'clock.
Exactly. We're on the way to 8 o'clock. It's 7:33 in the morning. Good to have you along this morning. How are you today?
This is Anthony Horvath. You are a Christian apologist as well as the webmaster for St. Johnny. Forgive me.
That's all right. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you, Anthony? We're so glad to have you.
Well, I'm fighting off case at the Mondays, as you can imagine.
Fend them off. We will help you. We
like
will
much.
We'll help you stave off the Mondays. Now, explain to us what an apologist does. What do you do in your spare time?
In my spare time, I... that's a matter of debate around here in this household. But I spend quite a bit of time talking with non-Christians, trying to explain to them why the evidence is... that are out there are, you know, they're good enough for them to become Christians over it. People have for thousands of years. And, you know, you've got big-name people like Anthony Flew, who was a big atheist for a while, who's even come around to them. So they should seriously think about it.
It's important that we know what we think we know. Are there some commonly held areas of, you know, like God helps those who help themselves? Are there some commonly held areas?
My favorite verse.
Yes, right out of the Bible, right?
Yeah, well, I think right now my focus has ended up turning to the church more because I find that a lot of Christians are coming out of the church not even knowing some basics, kind of like what you're getting around to there. And I think, for example, of Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code and things like that, this idea that the church was or the scriptures were a late fabrication, I think that it's very important for Christians themselves to know that the New Testament books, you know, they were all pretty popular as early as 50 to 60 years after Jesus, not 300 years after Jesus. That alone is enough to end, you know, Dan Brown's bestseller run.
But we just don't know the facts.
Right, we don't know basic facts, things that would really help us. Now, I'm not the kind of guy who thinks that we can argue everyone into any position.
Yeah.
My goal is to try to remove roadblocks for people.
Yeah.
And I think that what people find is a big roadblock is this idea that just sort of this lurking rumor that they can't prove or disprove that the Christianity is just a, you know, a story that was made up and developed over 300-400 years. And that's a big roadblock for some people.
One of the roadblocks I've experienced too is the idea that we should not judge. Judge not and you will not be judged, you know, and
right.
Because I saw you had a flat tire in the parking lot, I didn't want to judge your car care skills and abilities. So I'm not going to tell you have a flat tire and I just let you go and crash.
Yeah. You know, and if somebody is standing in the way of a bus coming 50 miles an hour, you're not going to argue with them.
No,
push
no.
them out of the way.
No, yes. Because that would be a matter of preference.
That's right.
I need to understand their position.
Right.
But how do we balance, you know, so many of us were told that when we came to Christ that we needed to share that immediately, that our testimony, just the fact that Christ had saved us and had set us on a new path was sufficient. How do you balance that with your program of church bulletins and equipping us with, you know, St. Augustine's
sure.
and the archaeological findings? How do you balance those two things?
Well, our personal testimony can be very, very powerful.
Sure.
The problem is that it's the most powerful to ourselves. You know, it's a way to look at our own lives and see how we've changed. And then secondarily, you know, we can look at our close friends, people who know us, and they can look at how we were and now how we are. But what the problem is what happens when finally you're talking to somebody who doesn't know you at all, doesn't know where you've come from.
Yeah.
When they hear your testimony, they're not going to be impressed one bit. And that this is an overwhelming problem in general. We just can't take our personal experiences out and hand them to people to take as their own. So what we want to do, and it's a balancing act, don't get me wrong. What we want to do is we want to establish relationships with people ultimately so that we can get to a point where we remove some roadblocks so that there does come a place where we can say, and now let me tell you about my testimony and my experience. And if you've established a pattern of trustworthiness with them, they'll listen to you.
Right.
How do you do that in a short-term basis when the waitress comes over to the table and you can, you know, I always start with something like, hey, we're about to give thanks for our food. Is there something I can pray for you for? And I've had everything from a waitress grab my hand and join in with the prayer to, oh, no, no, and then have that person actually change to a different waiter or a server. You know,
to flee your prayer.
To flee our prayer, yeah.
Well, I usually start out with a bad joke. I'm with my wife.
And these are published on your website. We can all take advantage of your bad joke.
No, I have full copyright on those babies. No, it's one of those things that just takes a lot of practice. And I think one of the differences between apologetics and normal evangelism is that apologetics is kind of like it's pre-evangelism. You know, you're setting up the stage for somebody else to come along and make those pitches and make those conversations. So, you know, to be honest, you don't get a whole lot of 1 minute apologetics bits with people.
Yeah.
But if you know, you never know, and the other, you also never know what's going to set somebody up. I once helped somebody reconsider Christianity merely by arguing from Santa Claus. The argument was that Santa Claus is a myth just like God, and I pointed out that Santa Claus is rooted in history with St. Nicholas.
Sure.
There was a real person there. And, you know, amazingly, that did it.
Yeah, yeah. And ultimately, you do you think of yourself as a seed planter, planting seeds?
No, actually, I think of myself as a manure spreader. You know, that passage really... that you're referring to there in 1 Corinthians, you know, some plant, some water. Well, I go in and I break up the rocks, I crush the soil, and then I have to wait around in manure for a little bit.
Amen.
And then hopefully then the soil will be good for somebody else.
But it's a matter of sequences, you know, that we each have a position in the body of Christ. As you said, you're called to be a manure spreader and to break up the fallow ground.
Quote me on that.
No, we would never.
We got
it's
it right
between
off your,
us.
Got off your website. It's right on
the
website.
It's just the three of us. But, you know, it's interesting that each of us have a different role, and it is a tag team as much as we talk about, you know, WWF. There is a tag team element to it. Somebody else will come along, and you pray that they'll be prepared to take the person, you know, to the next step.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's one of the sad things. I mean, I have this passion for sharing this information. A lot of it is information that I wish that I would have had before entering college, because that was a very hard time for me intellectually and with my faith. But by taking the position that I have and doing the things that I do, I don't get to see the harvest nearly as much as other evangelists. And that does make it hard as you go along. But it's still important work. And if something is important, you do it, whether or not you always get to see the reward or not.
Yeah. And this process happened in your own life. You were raised in the Christian church and then, you know, kind of drifted and then came back. And you're seeing that pattern a lot within young people. In fact, you even claim that the church is creating atheists.
Yeah, well, by default, just sort of setting kids up to get clobbered when they go to college, more or less. I had 12 years of Christian schooling. I'm not talking about Sunday school or something like that. I'm talking, you know, day school, 9-to-5 kind of stuff. And I went to college to be a pastor, and it only took about 2 months at a Christian university.
Yeah.
When my faith was in shambles. And the problem is kind of embarrassing. I had all of these questions that I thought were so hard. And then after a year, I saw that they were really easy, you know. Mm. But I just didn't know where to find the answers. I had never heard them before. And I think that's kind of what happens to our youth today. They come through our congregations. We have youth groups that aim to retain them, often, you know, through entertainment. And we want them to have good feelings about church, and I'm not, you know, trying to mock that or anything. But then when they go to college, and they're outside of that atmosphere and that setting, they begin to ask questions. And that's kind of where I've picked up on lately, because I want those young people to have some idea. If they don't know the answers, they ought to know where they can go to get them.
Excellent. Right. Excellent. You stay right there. We'll take a break and come back with more. Special guest this morning, Anthony Horvath, Christian apologist. Good to have you along. Stay right
for
there.
I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord.
36742.
It's 744, 16 before 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. Anthony Horvath is with us, a Christian apologist, helping us to understand what we believe and what we don't believe. You've got an application for bulletins.
Yeah. The bulletin inserts. I told you that I've been sort of retooling to minister more to the church than to the unbeliever. And I thought, how can I get some of this apologetic material, these basic facts, in the hands of Christians, normal Christians, who would never come find my webpage? And I thought of these bulletin inserts, because every church that I go into almost always seems to have a bulletin. So these bulletin inserts, they play off of that week's readings. So if you're reading about baptism, I will have in there some of the history of baptism, some of the church author, like Aquinas or Augustine, talking about it, so we can see where it stands in the big scheme of things. I mentioned on occasion archaeological type discoveries. For example, some people may have sort of heard about the John the Baptist cave. You know, I sort of referenced that. And so the idea of the bulletins is to slowly build up some of these facts, and they're not usually presented in any kind of an argumentative form, but just here are the facts, and I let them draw their own conclusions on the significance of them.
And to equip us really to fulfill 1 Peter 3:15, so that we are prepared to give a defense.
That's right. Yeah, and I throw in some things that I know are relevant. This is a Christmas series for these bulletins, so one of the entries is, is Christmas just a borrowed pagan holiday? You know, and I
shopping.
That. What's that?
Shopping.
Well, yes, you could make that argument, can't you? Yeah, it is a problem, but there are people who are thrown off when they find out that December 25th was originally a pagan holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just tell them before they get frightened that, yeah, the Christians who made December 25th Christmas knew that it was a pagan holiday, and they wanted to do something better on that day.
Mm.
Right, to redeem it.
To deify it.
Exactly, to sanctify it.
Yep, sanctify
it. Just knowing that something as nuanced as that can change people from having a feeling of doubt as they approach the Christian faith as one of being, you know, a little bit more trusting.
Wow. If folks want to get in touch with you, reach you, a website, an address, some way they can reach you?
Yep. StJohnny.com is the best way. It's SNTJohnny.com. John the Gospel is my favorite of them. And I check my email, and I will be very happy to hear from anyone, whether they're believers or not believers. I take all.
I love that you say that apologetics shouldn't be left to professors or specialists like C.S. Lewis, but it needs to be incorporated into everything we do as a church.
Yeah,
that this
really
needs
does.
To be something that we are actively pursuing is a defense of our faith. You know, and even these bite-sized pieces that you offer within the bulletin program can equip us.
Yeah, absolutely. That first Peter 3:15 is not given to the doctors among us. It's for all of us.
Right.
So, we have no excuse but to figure out how best we can be apologists in our own lives.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Anthony, thank you so much. Again, your website is sntjohnny.com, and we can log in for more information and more ways to defend the gospel. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you along. Anthony Horvath, Christian apologist, thanks for joining us this morning. Good to have you on the Reach FM Morning Show. It's 12 before 8. It's 7:48. It's Skillets.